Hi, I'm Emily Unkrich, the mother of Lee Unkrich, the director of Toy Story 3. You are listening to the Pixar podcast.
To infinity and beyond!
So, how long is this going to take?
Squirrel!
You can't rush art.
I never look back, darling. It distracts from the now.
What's the point of going out there? They'll only laugh at me.
Stranger, from the outside.
Greetings.
Hello there, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of the Pixar Podcast. This is episode number 112. ThePixarPodcast.com/112 is where you can find the show notes for this episode. I'm your host, Derek Clements. And on today's episode of the Pixar Podcast, it's Lights, Camera, Action. Actually, it's just lights. We're going to be talking with Angelique Reich. She was character lighting lead on Inside Out, and she's going to tell us all about lighting in a computer animated film. It's a pretty fascinating process. At the press event, she gave us a little presentation about the process of lighting, and it's pretty interesting. So the animators, you know, have their little puppets in the computer animated world. That's kind of how I think about it. And so the animators move the characters around, and then it's up to the lighting artist to really make it look like that final product. And it's actually pretty striking. She showed us some side-by-side images of the just raw animation footage compared to the then polished lit scenes. And it's really pretty remarkable. And on the show notes for this episode, we on thepixarpodcast.com, you'll be able to see the just raw animated scene, and then the lit scene as well, the fully lit. So it's pretty fascinating stuff. It was really great to sit down and talk to her. I hope that you'll really enjoy our conversation. In addition to talking about lighting and Inside Out and Pixar, we also talked about something else, which is women in animation. Angelique Reich is a co-president with the organization Women in Animation, the San Francisco chapter. So it was really interesting to talk to her about that as well. So, I hope that you enjoyed this episode, and here is my conversation with character lighting lead, Angelique Reich. So, I'm excited to talk to you, because I feel like lighting is one of these things that, there's actually a lot of elements of computer animation that I feel like is hard to understand, because it's more complicated than just traditional animation, right. And lighting is one of those things.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, I really appreciated your presentation today, and it kind of helped me, but maybe you can help me more understand, really, what is lighting? What is your job as a lighting artist?
Okay, so basically without us, you can think about it as our job is to essentially turn the lights on in the scene, because literally without us, there would be no lighting, you know? It would be just a dark image. At the end of the day, the assets that we're getting into our department, you know, none of them are lit. You know, they're shaded beautifully and they're animated beautifully, and they're all expressing the story. But there is no lighting in the scene to really even show you what those characters are. And the way I like to describe it, as I did in the presentation, is our job is very similar to a live action cinematographer. That is the easiest way for people to understand, I think, because I think then people have an idea of what I mean. You know, where if you're beauty lighting a character, you know, you're going to have a really nice soft light and you're going to put a nice rim on their hair. We do the same kind of things every day with our characters, but we're just doing them in animated films and we're doing them in the computer. But the principles still hold true. So, for example, we all have cinematographers that we look up to in live action and that we watch their work to inspire our own work, even though we're doing animated films.
Yeah. So is computer animation more influenced by live action than other kinds of animation in that way then?
That's a good question. I think traditional 2D animation is also as well. I mean, you can find the same lighting principles if you go back and look at stills of like Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah.
You know, when Maleficent, you know, when she's in scenes, there's a lot of greens. You know, they maybe didn't have the form, the three-dimensional forms to express it, but the color choices are beautiful, and they are always using color to reinforce character personality, which is one of the things I talked about.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that those principles are universal. To be honest, I think you can apply them to 2D, you can apply them to 3D, and you can apply them to live action.
Okay.
You know. Even like, again, character personality, lighting position. You know, if you have a really low light on a character and it's casting those kind of harsh shadows, you know, up on their faces, it's that kind of spooky, moody lighting.
Yeah
that's universal. You know, we see it in film, we see it in 2D, and we see it in 3D.
How do these principles, well, okay, I wrote down the principles.
Sure.
Directing the eye,
uh-huh.
Creating depth, enhancing the drama, conveying what time of day it is,
uh-huh.
And then revealing character things about the personality or the situation. Yep. So do those principles influence your life outside of...
Oh, wow. That's a tough question.
Do you see the world through...
I do. I absolutely... Yeah. And now that you say that, see the world, that, yeah, they absolutely do. When I'm walking out at night, I'm looking at the density of the shadows. It sounds super geeky, but it's super true. I live near Mount Diablo. So every day when I'm driving home, I get to see the amazing atmosphere and I'm constantly analyzing. I mean, a lot of the times I'll be working on a shot where I'm literally setting up atmosphere on trees and mountains.
Yeah.
And when I drive home, like, did I get that right? You know, or I need to add more cool in there. Yeah. So yeah, if you're a lighter, the whole world around you is, you know, you're analyzing it constantly to pick up clues.
What are the windows like in your home?
It's true. That's a good point. Someone else asked me that. I was like, yeah, we actually did just add some new lights in my house.
Nice. Very good. Okay. So I actually want to talk to you about women in animation, San Francisco.
Yeah, I would love to talk about that.
Just tell me about that. You're a co-founder.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Talk. What is that organization?
Okay, so Women in Animation, we're a nonprofit organization in San Francisco, and we are the San Francisco chapter, but the main organization lives down in LA. I started the San Francisco chapter about 2 years ago, and the reason it started, I had gone to SIGGRAPH, and there was, they do that Birds of a Feather, where just like groups get together, okay. And there was a group called Women in Animation. So I attended, and there was myself and one other professional, and this is SIGGRAPH,
yeah.
One other professional, and then a room full of students,
yeah.
And the students were all there, female students, and they were all excited to get mentors and excited to hear about the industry, and there were no professionals showing up, and it just broke my heart. So I went up to the founder, and I said, you know, I would. Is there a San Francisco chapter where I can get more involved? And she said, no, which again blew my mind because of all the animation that we have going on up here and all the fantastic women we have working up here.
Yeah.
So immediately, myself and another student who goes to school at the Academy of Art named Mary Kate Dangoya, we got together and we said, all right, we're going to start this chapter.
Yeah.
We started 2 years ago, and now we're over 130 members. We have events all the time. We have a lot of events here at Pixar. So, for example, Catherine Serafian, the producer of Brave, spoke at our very first event. The very last event was Darla Anderson. And the events are so special because, you know, you get this group of women. We also have some male members. We're open to men as well. I think we have like four. But the room, the energy in the room and the atmosphere, you know, our speakers are so candid and, you know, they're such amazing role models that it really gives the members an opportunity just, you know, to decide where they want to go in animation and to have these role models to look up for. So it's been this incredible thing. I've had members come up to me and say that they didn't want to apply for an internship because they didn't feel they were ready. But then they saw a panel of the women who worked on Monsters University, and all of them kept saying, go for it. Don't be afraid. Go for it. And so they applied for that position, and they got it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's been this fantastic thing, in my life.
So cool. Well, congratulations. What would you say are the big challenges? Like a big challenge with women in animation right now, and what are you most hopeful?
I think the big challenge, the great thing right now is that there's a lot of momentum. You know,
okay.
There's Lean In, Sheryl Sandberg came here and spoke a few months ago. So I think there is a lot of momentum and there's a lot of awareness right now. So I think our challenge is to capitalize on that momentum. You know, we really need to get the word out and to make sure that that women know that, you know, that the women who want to be in this industry know there are women in this industry who are willing to help them. And that we can do anything we can to do demo reels and critiques. There's a lot of women willing to mentor. So I think that is definitely one of the challenges. The other challenge is women have, you know, priorities outside of work that they, you know, they have children and they have husbands and they need to keep the house running. And it sounds antiquated, but it's true, you know. So a lot of women can't devote a lot of time outside of work. So I think for me, certainly one of the challenges is coming up with some creative ideas to pair, you know, students or people who want to get in the industry with people who are working in the industry in ways that will maximize the take the amount of time that it's going to take the professional women to keep that to a minimum, but maximize the effect of that, because I know those women don't have a lot of time.
Right.
And that was a two-part question, right?
Yeah. So what are you hopeful about?
What am I hopeful about? I am hopeful that we get more women in the industry with you know, a lot more better quality demo reels, better mentoring. I would love for it's not to have a women in animation, you know, basically.
Right.
That would be the goal. If it's not a question, you know, it's just that's the norm.
Yeah. Are there still institutional issues like that are making it harder?
I think that there are, and I think that is just because it can be more difficult for a woman, for example, to find a mentor who's a male. And if you have an industry where a lot of those top upper levels are filled with men, it can be harder for women to move up in that industry, you know, and there's just a comfort level there. And I think part of that, I don't take the tact that it's on the men to do this. I think it's on both of us, you know. I think it is up to the women to, you know, get out there and put themselves out there and get to know more of the men. And I think it's on the men to be more open to mentoring more women and to not see that as a barrier to entry, you know?
Well, it's exciting to think of all those students at SIGGRAPH, right? That's the that's a good image.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, my final question, who is Pete Doctor?
Wow. maybe you should be asking Pete Doctor. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so for me, Pete has been my absolute favorite director. I'm not just saying that because I'm on this interview. Yeah. He is my favorite director, and he was from the time I was in school. I have a Monsters Inc. poster that I've had hanging on my wall since before I even got into my graduate program, before I got here. Cool. So he has always been my favorite director. He has an amazing way of creating so much heart in a film and so much beauty in a film at the same time. I think his films are, they're just touching. He just touches your soul, you know? I swear, they should give out Kleenex with every one of the movie tickets or movies that he writes. And he's also the most genuine person, a director that I've ever met. He is so down to earth. We would have socials up in our bar area for lighting, and he would come to those and talk to people and make cocktails. And, you know, he's just such a real kind person. You know, I think with Pete, he is, you get what, you know, who he is, you know, he really is that person. And Jonas as well. And the two of them working on the film together as producer and director, that just flows down to our entire team. So the entire film production, it just, we all have that kind of energy, and we all have that kind of just spirit and camaraderie. It's amazing. They really create an amazing atmosphere, and I think we'd do anything for them.
Do they have to know how to do your job?
Pete actually has a really good eye for lighting. I think more so he's more connected to lighting than a lot of directors. So yeah, I think he might not know, like, if he sat down in front of the computer and, you know, I said create a light, he'd be like, what? but in terms of just visually the goals that he wants to make sure are achieved through lighting, he is absolutely connected with those.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for meeting. And it was great to talk to you. Yeah, congratulations on the film.
Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Yeah. You're listening to the Pixar Podcast. That was my interview with Angelique Reich. And at the beginning of the episode, I mentioned a presentation that Angelique Reich gave talking about lighting and explaining kind of how it works. I'm going to go ahead and play for you the audio of that now. Now, the visuals definitely enhanced the presentation, so I would encourage you to go to thepixarpodcast.com and look at the show notes for this episode so that you can at least see the comparison between some of the things that she's talking about, and you can get a sense of when we're oohing and aahing, that's kind of what we're looking at. But I hope that you enjoy the presentation. Now, next week, we're going to have an interview with Ralph Eggleston, who was production designer at Inside Out, but he also is very famous for directing the wonderful, delightful short For the Birds. So that'll be next week. Thank you so much for listening to the Pixar Podcast. It's great to have you listening. If you want to help out the podcast, please write a review on iTunes. That would be really helpful to push us up on the rankings. But thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week. And without further ado, here is a presentation about lighting from Angelique Reich.
So welcome, you guys. Thanks for coming here to Pixar. Did you enjoy the bit of the movie that you saw?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I want to see the
ending. I know. It's so cruel.
It's like a telenovela without an ending.
Such a teaser. When it shut off, were you guys just like, no? It's kind of like with the Last Hunger Games. Like, that's how I felt when it ended.
Yeah.
You know? I was like, what? Do I have to wait a whole year? Cool. Well, my name is Angelique Reich, and I was the character lighting lead on Inside Out. And I'm super excited to talk to you guys about the lighting today, because this was definitely one of the most challenging films we've ever had to light here at Pixar. So I'm going to give you a lot of information about some of those challenges that you can write about for your readers. In particular, I'm going to talk a little bit about the fact that we had two completely different worlds, which is a unique thing on this film. And each of those worlds had their own kind of unique feel. So I'll talk a little bit about that. And then additionally, we have our beautiful main character of Joy, who is a light source. So you can imagine the kind of lighting complexity that presented to us.
So as the character lighting lead, just to give you some background, I worked really closely with the director of photography, with the characters department, and with the art department to really finalize the look of the film. That was a big part of my role. I also tested the characters quite a bit to make sure that they were ready to be lit. And then additionally, I was basically the person for character support for a lighting team of around 35 people. So that's kind of how my role progressed over the film. I was on the film for about 3 years, so it was a good chunk of time. So first I'm going to talk a little bit about what is lighting, and I'll just give you a brief introduction to what a day in the life of a lighting technical director is actually like here. After that, I'm going to talk a little bit about the human world versus the mind world challenges and how we kind of solve some of those. And then finally, I'll talk about how we lit Joy to bring her to life on the big screen. So what is lighting? I love to start by telling people that our roles as lighting technical directors on animated films are actually really similar to the role of a cinematographer on a live-action film. So our role in animated films is similar to a live-action film, except we don't have to move all those heavy lights around every day. So that's a pretty crucial difference. That said, though, the brain power or the muscle power that we kind of save from moving all those lights around definitely goes into brain power, because in the computer we are creating everything from scratch. We're creating all our lights, all our shadows, all our components. We don't get any of that for free. So additionally, we're tracking all of that information. So lighters have to be very technical, because they are tracking all the lights that are in the scene, and they know how those lights are combining to create the final image. But they also have to have a good artistic eye, because we want to create a really beautiful image at the end of the day. So in this example, you can see how on the left, we have an actress with her beauty lighting setup. And then on the right, we have an actual screen grab of Joy. And you can see how she can have a very similar lighting setup in our computer software. So unfortunately, our setups are not always that simple, though. So this is an example of the Dream Productions stage when Joy and Sadness and Bing Bong go in there. And in this shot, we actually have over 175 lights. So this is a slightly more extreme example, but it gives you an example of the kind of complexity that we are actually managing on a daily basis. And then this is all the lights and components with their guides. We call these guides viz. We go back and forth one more time, so it's a lot. Yeah, we definitely we have to be on our toes when we're lighting. So when shots come into the lighting department, they typically already have their sets, they have the final camera, and they usually have mostly final animation. And this shot is an example of all of that work. But even with all of that work from the upstream departments done, the shot's pretty uninteresting, in my opinion, without lighting. Maybe that's just because I'm a lighter. but that's why I really think we have the best job here, because we get to bring the scenes to life, and we get to really create these stunning images with all the hard work that the upstream departments have done. Here's another example of an unlit scene, and it shows how visually complex an unlit scene can be to the eye, and also just not very visually appealing. But when we add some beautiful lighting, we can create a really appealing image that's also visually organized. You know, your eye goes right to the train. It's really important. A lot of that geometric complexity just kind of fades into the darkness. So lighting workflow. What is our day like? What is the day in a typical lighter like? So we get to work, just like you guys did today. And then we get our breakfast. You probably saw the cereal bar. It's the best perk ever. And then we sit down to work on our shots. So when we first get a shot for the first time, we'll start with a pastel from the art department or the director of photography. And this is an example of one of those pastels from the film. So once we have that, we'll get a kickoff from the director of photography. And that kickoff is going to include the story point behind the shot and then how the lighting can reinforce that story. So for example, if our DP was kicking us off on this shot, they might say that the point of this shot is really about Riley being at home in Minnesota and how warm and safe that bedroom is and how happy she is there. So we really, although it's a night scene, we don't want it to seem scary. We want it to seem cozy and inviting. Because later we're going to contrast this bedroom with her bedroom in San Francisco, which is going to be very cold and uninviting. So, you know, even though that happens quite a bit later in the film, we're setting that up here in one of the opening sequences. This shot is also about the relationship between Riley's parents and Riley. So we want to tie them together using that warm hallway light. More technical notes that she may make are to make sure that we hit the contrast in the scene, that she likes how dark it is, and then also like to keep this darkening on Riley to really just frame the image. So those are just some examples, but once we have those notes, we'll go back to our desks and we'll take a first pass. And when we feel like we're ready, we'll take the shot back to the director of photography in what we call walkthroughs. And we usually have about a walkthrough a day or every other day. And during the walkthrough, if we're not quite hitting what the DP wants, they'll give us a little more detailed notes. They'll give us a little better direction. Or if we actually are heading in the right direction, they'll tell us that, and then they'll give us additional notes to just make the scene more beautiful. So we go back to our desk and we do those notes. And take them back to the DP, and this goes on all week, and back to our desks. And then finally, when the DP is really happy with the shot and we've hit the look, the shot gets approved, and then everybody's happy. So then we get assigned more shots, and the whole process starts all over again. And we get about 2.5 on average shots approved a week in lighting. So we're constantly checking in with our DP. We may have a lot more shots than that assigned to us, but in terms of approvals, it's about 2.5 a week. So here are some examples of a few of the shots I lit on the film, and on the top is the pastel and on the bottom is the final film frame. So you can see how much we really rely on those images out of art to influence our lighting. And the reason for this is that it's really quick and inexpensive for art to go through a bunch of ideas and to create these pastels and then to get that buy-off from the director. However, once we get into lighting and we start working in the computer, it's a much more expensive process. So that's why we really want to make sure that the look is pretty well nailed in art, and that way it saves a lot of money because we know the look that we're going for in lighting. And here's a few more. A few more pastels and images. Another. So another really important thing to know about lighting is to understand the principles of lighting. So the DP is always going to be keeping these principles in mind while they're giving us notes, and then we're going to be keeping them in mind while we're addressing those notes. These principles are going to ensure that we're both supporting the story and also creating the most...
Can we take a picture of this light or not?
Yeah, I think yeah. So. Are pictures okay? Yeah.
I don't know. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. The principles should be supporting the story, but then they should also be helping us to create the most appealing image possible. And these principles are directing the viewer's eye, creating depth, enhancing mood, atmosphere, and drama, conveying time of day, and revealing character, personality, and situation. So, directing the viewer's eye. Shots are on screen only briefly, which means that the storytelling effectiveness of that shot is going to depend on how well and how quickly the audience eye is drawn to the main story point. So this is a big part of our job because, for example, in this shot, the boyfriend machine is the subject of the shot. We want to make sure the audience reads that. However, without lighting, it's a pretty visually complex image. It's not very visually appealing. But when we add some beautiful lighting and some nice warm light, some sunlight on the boyfriend machine, your eye goes right where we want it to. And a couple of the techniques that we're using, we are definitely dimming down back here. Watch, when I go back, you'll see how the background gets kind of just toned down with atmosphere. And then we're also dimming down the backs of the characters. Show you that. And the reason for that is that we want your eye to go right here. We want you to basically look past them. Creating depth. So certain staging and lighting techniques are going to cause an object, an image to appear flat. For example, if the light is really frontal or if the staging is parallel to camera, as in this example. While other techniques are going to enhance depth and really draw the viewer into the scene. For example, if there's a lot of good value contrast, lots of lights and darks in the image, and then also good foreground and background elements. And you can see how we're using that same idea of darkening these guys down so that your eye goes right past them and looks at Buzz, who is the focus of this shot. So here's an example from Inside Out, and I love this example of creating depth because in the unlit version, it's really hard to tell how far back those buildings are from the Dream Production sign, how far back the water tower is. Everything just feels very flat. But with some really clever, beautiful lighting, we can just spatially organize that really complex scene. And then suddenly the buildings fade away and the Dream Production sign comes forward. And since that is the point of the shot, this is also an excellent example of directing the eye because In the unlit version, you can barely read it. So now we really bring it out with a lot of bright lights. We darken down behind it because, again, we just have a moment for the audience to know that that's where they're headed, and we want them to make sure that they read that. Mm. Enhancing mood, atmosphere, and drama. So I think this is one of the funnest parts of our job because we get to set the overall mood of a shot depending on the intended story point. This can help enhance the viewer's emotional experience, and we can do this through lighting intensities, through different colors and values in the scene. For example, we can light really moody, contrasty images to convey a darker tone, or we can light really bright, cheerful images if it's a more comedic moment. So in this example, without lighting, the image is pretty unexciting. It's hard to know what Sadness is doing or why she looks so apprehensive. But when we add some nice, beautiful lighting, suddenly it comes to life and it becomes a very dramatic scene. And it really gets the viewer more engaged in the image. So conveying time of day. This is going to be another critical fundamental of lighting design because time of day is going to be an important indicator of the mood and the atmosphere. And when you're thinking about time of day, it's going to be really important to think about your key to fill ratio, the shadow length and density in a scene, and then the color of your light sources. So morning light is typically going to be cheerful and optimistic. You can see with little cute little baby Riley. She's so cute. So the sun is going to be lower in the sky. The shadows are going to be longer. There's typically a higher key to fill ratio because the sun isn't high enough in the sky yet, so there isn't as much light bouncing around. Noon lighting is typically going to be not very aesthetically pleasing, but the harshness of it can be used if you're trying to convey a very specific mood. And just like how in photography people don't like to shoot at noon, we don't like to light noon sequences because of the same reasons. The shadows are going to be really sharp. They're going to be really harsh on the character's face. The light is color is going to be very desaturated, and the image is going to feel kind of flat because there's a lot of light bouncing around. Conversely, sunset, as the sun lowers in the sky, you're going to get longer shadows and you're going to get more warm tones, more reds in the light color. The overall contrast is going to decrease because the fill light in the atmosphere is going to decrease as the sun sets. Evening light is going to feel more dramatic, a little more romantic. It can also be kind of melancholy because the day is coming to an end. So this is an example. We used sunset here. It's a really sweet moment between the family, and we use that, the sunset lighting is kind of a romantic look at it. And then night scenes are going to be really contrasty due to the low levels of fill light. Your specular highlights are going to become more noticeable at night because of that lack of fill. Since so much of a night scene is often in shadow, it can have a mood that's really mysterious and also really foreboding. And then finally, revealing character personality and situation. So since our role as lighting artists is to convey a specific story point, revealing that character personality is really key to us achieving that goal. Differences in lighting position, in contrast, and in color, we can really use those to highlight a character's intent. So in this example, Riley's clearly upset. The animation has done a great job of conveying that. However, we can now take this unlit image and we can really push the drama in it by adding some really contrasty. Yeah, you can tell just how much you feel the mood of the scene as opposed to just kind of interpreting it from her facial reaction. So the other thing is that her eyes being in shadow really give you, they make you question what her mood is, what she's thinking. It's a really great tool that we can use to really reinforce character personality. So one of the biggest challenges on Inside Out was having these two completely different worlds that we were trying to light, and each needed to have its own tone and its own feel. Additionally, we were going to be cutting between these shots so quickly that we wanted to make sure the audience didn't get lost. We were really worried about that early on because, the cuts are quick. There's a lot of comedic moments, and we just wanted to make sure people knew right away, are we in the human world or are we in the mind world? So one of the things we use to help convey that in lighting is saturation. So early on, the director of photography and the art department decided that the human world was going to be much more desaturated in general than the mind world. And the coolest thing that we're doing is we're pushing those saturation levels throughout the entire film, which is really awesome. So when you go see the movie in the theaters, and definitely tell your readers to watch for that, because as Riley's state of mind changes, you'll see those saturation changes happen. So for example, here she's in her house in San Francisco, and you know, it's a pretty low point. It's not everything she hoped it would be. So we're really sucking the color out of the mind of the human world. And then in the mind world, it's just happy, pushed, super saturated color, so that when you watch the sequence, you really know where you are at any point. Here's another example when she quits hockey tryouts. And you can see just how dark and moody and desaturated Riley's world is compared to the bright, kind of more fun atmosphere of the mind world. So the other huge challenge on Inside Out was lighting Joy. And, you know, we had to basically ask ourselves, how do we light a light bulb? We've never done this before. She's essentially a light bulb. So this is actually a really important image. This was the first image that came out of the art department, which really nailed what we wanted Joy to look like. And it gave us a ton of clues for us in lighting to be able to use to develop a rig to be able to light her in the film. So let me give you a little backstory first. So typically when, bless you, typically we rely really heavily on value, which is gonna be just the lightness or darkness of our lighting for shaping on a character. We'll even look at images completely independent, bless you, completely independent of color. And you know, even in good black and white photography, you know, you want to have a good range of values. You want to make sure you have some lights, some good middle grays, and some darks. So that's why we're constantly analyzing our images just to make sure they have that tonal range. So unfortunately, when we got to Joy, she's so bright that we have very little value range across her face. So that meant that we needed to come up with a different way, essentially, of thinking about shaping her. So what we noticed from Ralph's painting is the super desaturated cools that he's used on her key side, going through these kind of medium yellows to this super saturated pink. So he's using color to get shaping in this image. So that is how we used, and we do use color in general on characters as well. It's not a completely new idea, but we usually are relying a lot more on value. So in this case, we knew we had to rely primarily on color, which was a new idea for us. So in order to hit this look, we developed a light rig, which is just a group of lights that we knew we were gonna use to light Joy throughout the film. So I'm gonna walk you through that rig now. So first off, she had just a glow light, which is just very flat. It's just meant to represent her emissive color. And then if we start on her key side, she had a kick, which was very cool and desaturated. And then her actual key was actually cool and also desaturated, which can seem counterintuitive to have a blue light on a yellow character. But in this case, it really helped us to push that shaping. Her soft key light was just neutral in color. It's just a white light. And we're using this to get those middle yellow tones. And then her kick on her off key side was this really warm, saturated pink. And all of those lights kind of combine to get that feeling of that color shaping across her face. So in addition to those lights, she has her inner glow, which is just that glow that's really close to her body. And we used the same idea with her inner glow. So her key side inner glow is just white, very desaturated. And then her off key side is this pink, very saturated color. And we like that idea so much that we use it on all the characters. So each of them, you can see they have their key side color, which will more closely mimic their actual body color. And then they have their off key side color, which is just a pushed color. And it just adds a little bit more color complexity to them. And then she also has a light just for her glow, her outer glow, which is just, it's just a white light illumined on her blue glow. And that's just kind of that aura that she always has around her. So here's a final lit image from the film. And you can see how closely we really relied on that original painting to create her light rig and essentially define the look of her in the film. Sorry, I can go back. You want to go back? Okay.
Oh,
I know.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
So in addition to lighting Joy, one of the really big challenges was, how is Joy now going to light the set and the other characters? So we needed to fulfill the artistic direction and that we wanted to have really believable light cast from her. As she moves around, we want to see that. Additionally, we want to have detailed light. So if she were to pick up a prop, we want to see the light from each of her fingers. You know, we don't just want just a bright wash of light across there. We really want to see that detail. The other technical challenge of that, though, is that she's in so many shots in the film that it needed to be fairly easy for the lighting team to manage and set up. It couldn't be a really complicated solution. So thankfully, during the development of the film, we were super excited to learn that RenderMan was developing what they call a geometric area light, or geometry light. And what this light does is it enables us to select a model and it will turn that model into an actual light source. Perfect, right? So unfortunately, we found out that it wasn't going to be ready for us for our production in time. So this was around December 2013, I think. And I remember telling people, all I want for Christmas is Joy's geometry light. So thankfully, we raised enough flags and we got everybody on in. And the RenderMan team came together with our global technology team and our technical lighting people. And by March, we had it deployed in production. So that light is what we used for Joy to light the set on in every shot in the show. So I can show you. Here's an example of all the lights. And you can see as she walks, you can see the effect of her geometry light. See that again. And then this is an example of just the geometry light biz. So you can see that. It's a little hard with the lighting in the room, but you can see how as she walks by those boxes, all of that animation of that light is coming from her animation. The lighter did not have to do anything special. You can also see that we're getting that kind of detail with her feet contact with the floor. We're also getting proper specular reflections. So this was a huge win for us on the show. So I hope this gave you a brief overview of the lighting process, and I hope that now when you're watching animated films or regular films, you're watching for the principles of lighting. We hope they're subtle, but but they're there. And then don't forget to watch for those saturation shifts between the human and mind world when you see the film. Mm-hmm. And then I'm happy to take any questions you guys have.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What's your process of deciding what's appropriate in terms of lighting for a scene? Do you simply experiment 1,000 different ways? Do you kind of just set an object in a room in real life and play with the light and see how it reflects to see, like, how do you decide what's appropriate? I guess what's your process?
So a lot of it comes from those pastels, like the art department pastels, but we don't always have those. So if we don't, we'll definitely look for reference. So like you're saying, we don't necessarily, like the animators will go and act it out in a mirror, you know? So we don't typically like move lights around physically, but what I'll do is I'll get online and I'll just Google every image I can find. Like if I'm working on rain, let's say I'm gonna Google backlit rain, I'm gonna Google frontlit rain, and I'm just gonna kind of compile those and take a look at how, you know, how they're being lit. What am I, you know, what kind of glints am I getting, you know? So yeah, definitely a lot of reference. Yeah, I remember looking at, they were like these night lights that were glow from the inside. They're like caterpillars or something like that. I don't know, they like sell them at Walmart, you know? But they had this great glow from the center of them. They really emanated light, and they were actually a pretty good, pretty decent, you know, for just getting some clues about glowy objects and emanating kind of soft diffuse light.
We are unfortunately
out of time.
Okay.
Yeah,
we gotta move on to the next one.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that looks good. Awesome. Thanks, you guys. Have a good day. You got a lot of cool stuff coming up.
Okay, Squirt here will now give you a rundown of proper exiting technique.
Mom, it's just my ball.
Don't let it happen again.
Yes, well, I'll try to be less careless.
It's got this kind of burning, melty, it's not really a smoky taste. It's a certain, it's kind of like a... It's kind of like this boom! Zap! Kind of taste. Don't you think? What would you call that flavor?
Lightning?
Don't look at the light!
I can't help it. It's so beautiful.
My name is Doug. I have just met you, and I love you.
Gone! It's all gone. All of it's gone. Bye-bye. Woo, see ya.
Thank you for listening to the Pixar Podcast.